Welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, September 9th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's get started with the Sioux City weather. Today, Thursday, a high of 77 with a low of 56. Friday, a high of 83, a low of 64. Saturday, a high of 85 with a low of 59. Sunday, rainy with a high of 75 and a low of 58. And on Monday, a high of 82 with a low of 62. Today, the sun will set at 7:46 p.m. Tomorrow, the sun will rise at 7 a.m. and it will set at 7:44 p.m. Let's look at our front page mini editorial, as we always start with. The Journal editorial board writes, "Kudos to the Sioux City Art Center for putting on another successful Art Splash celebration during the Labor Day weekend. The volunteers, artists, vendors, and sponsors all deserve a big round of applause." Today's starting article on the front page is "Sioux City Purple Heart Recipient Honored with West Point Trip" by Nick Heitrich. He writes, "While serving in the Marines during the war in Vietnam, Jack Hansen received a military decoration no one ever asks for. Because of that medal, he'll fly to New York later this month to take a part in an event anyone would be honored to attend. A Purple Heart recipient, Hansen will represent Iowa at the Purple Heart Patriot Project, a four-day event honoring American veterans who have been wounded in combat. I can't put it into words. I think it's an honor," Hansen said of the upcoming trip on September 27th through October 1st. The event's sponsor, the National Purple Heart Honor Mission, a nonprofit organization that pays tribute to Purple Heart recipients, will fly Hansen and an honoree from each state to New York, where they'll visit the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, the nearby National Purple Heart Hall of Fame Honor Museum, and other historic sites. It's a trip of a lifetime for men and women who risked their lives for their country. Hansen's thankful he's still here to make the trip. In 1968, he was erroneously listed among local men killed in Vietnam, months after he'd been wounded. He laughs about the error now, knowing that he easily could have ended up on that list, while manning 105mm M101A1 howitzers and firing shells at enemy locations. Hansen joined the U.S. Navy Reserves as a high school senior, then enlisted in the Marines in August 1966, months after graduating from Sioux City Central High School. He knew nothing about the ongoing military conflict in Vietnam and said he wouldn't have been able to find Vietnam on a map. Once in the Marines, he learned plenty about it, enough that he and a surface buddy, both of them full of that Marine spirit of being first to fight, continually asked to be sent to Southeast Asia while they were serving a tour of duty in Cuba. "We were begging to go, and finally they sent us," Hansen said. Hansen deployed to Vietnam in November 1967, a member of Delta Battery, 2nd Battalion, 11 Marines, 1st Marine Division. On January 8, 1968, he was at his gun firing harassment fire at a suspected enemy positions near Tho Tien in South Vietnam. After being relieved for the night, he hit the rack to get some sleep, but his rest was interrupted by shouts of "incoming," and he rushed back to the big guns as the enemy launched a mortar and rocket attack on the American position. The shelling eventually let up, and an officer said it appeared that the attack was over months before one more enemy shell hit. "It landed behind me, sent me flying in the air, and I landed," Hansen said. "Then they started yelling for a corpsman to get me." Hansen had shrapnel in the back of his left knee and left arm and in the back of his right hip. He was carried to an aid station and flown by helicopter to a hospital in Da Nang. After treatment, Hansen spent 30 days rehabbing at Cam Ranh Bay. Then it was back to the guns, he said. It wasn't a million-dollar wound. A term soldiers gave a wound that wasn't fatal or crippling, but was serious enough to earn them a permanent trip home for the fighting. Hansen received his Purple Heart in February 1968 and served with his unit until December 1968 when he was shipped home. He remained in the Marines, serving in the military police until 1972. He was a police officer in Fremont, Nebraska, before returning to Sioux City and worked for UPS before becoming unit administrator with the Army Reserves, a position he held for 20 years until his retirement in 2008. From 1974 to 1994, he was a member of the Army Reserves, achieving the rank of Command Sergeant Major, the highest rank possible. Hansen currently serves as the commander of Sioux City's Chapter 426 of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, a veterans organization for Purple Heart recipients. The Iowa commander of the State Military Order of the Purple Heart nominated him for the upcoming trip. His wartime service long completed, Hansen doesn't have to dig deep into his memory for a reminder of the night he was wounded. I'm still carrying that shrapnel in my knee and hip, he said. He'll carry it to West Point. On a trip that's been postponed a couple of times because of COVID-19, Hansen said he looks forward to meeting other Purple Heart veterans and taking in the history of an area where George Washington once had his headquarters. I was honored and excited, and I'm really looking forward to it, he said. Woodbury County removes requirements for quality assurance questionnaire for projects by Caitlin Yamada. She writes, the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors have removed a step in the bidding process that required contractors to complete a quality assurance questionnaire. Building Services Director Kenny Schmitz said the questionnaire has caused higher contract bids, increased staff costs, decreased competition, and added subjectivity to the bidding process. The quality assurance questionnaire was a major part of the discussion regarding the bids for the new law enforcement center. The questionnaire was required to be completed by winning bidders for contracts in excess of $300,000 to make sure that they adhered to all laws. It was intended to add a layer of security, according to county documents. But the board voted 4-1 to abolish the use of agenda approvals and resolutions relating to the questionnaire. Felicia Hilton, political director of the North Central States Council of Carpenters, asked the board to consider a replacement for the policy to help prevent subcontractors from hiring other contractors that don't use quality labor or don't provide proper workers' compensation. Schmitz provided letters of feedback from outside entities who have used the quality assurance questionnaire, and explanations as to why the extra step is not as effective as intended. Kevin Rust with Goldberg Group Architects said the questionnaire is redundant to the standard contract documents in place. CW Suter Services President John Baker agreed, saying the questionnaire is a duplication of the bonding process and the AIA documents that are used for bidding the project. Rust said asking about a contractor's financial standing and past litigation could potentially result in legal action or bid protests. At the point this questionnaire becomes part of the public record, a contractor that wasn't selected could potentially file a bid protest or take other legal action on the grounds they feel the awarded contractor should have been disqualified based on a particular question's response, Rost said. Reviewing the questionnaire and responding to individuals' and organizations' views has also created more work for those involved, Rost said. The LEC Authority, the County Baker Group, and Goldberg Group Architects have put in exorbitant amount of time and effort. Schmidt said he did not track his hours, but the Baker Group said they spent more than 350 hours working on the quality assistance questionnaire. I just don't believe it's working for us, and that's why I would like to abolish it, Schmidt said. Positive COVID-19 cases in Woodbury County Up Again Last Week by Caitlin Yamada. COVID-19 infections rose again in Woodbury County last week, and county health officials believe the increase in infections may be seasonal in nature. The county reported 287 cases for the week beginning August 30th, an increase of 37 cases from the 250 reported the week prior, according to the Siouxland District Health Weekly report. Tyler Brock with Siouxland District Health said the virus is widespread across the county right now, and there seems to be a seasonal nature to the increase. In the beginning of September 2020, there were 219 infections. The number of cases in subsequent weeks jumped to 260 and then 473. Brock said the cases spiked and then decreased as the months progressed. He added that there are currently spikes in cases across the Midwest and northern states. The last time Woodbury County's positivity numbers were this high was the second week of January, when 354 cases were reported, Brock said. Last week, the county's weekly positivity rate rose to 13.2%, up from 11.3% the previous week. The number of those hospitalized has also increased compared to prior weeks. There were 28 people hospitalized who had the virus last week, including 17 who were hospitalized due to COVID-19. Previously, 23 patients hospitalized in Sioux City had the virus, including 10 whose hospitalizations were primarily due to the virus, according to the report. The others were hospitalized mainly for non-COVID issues. Brock said the hospitals have a manageable number of COVID-19 cases and noted that there are fewer severe cases compared to last year. Public health officials and others continue to encourage local residents to get vaccinated, saying it's the best ways to reduce the rates of serious infection. A total of 43.4% of the county's residents have completed the single or two-dose vaccinations, according to public health data. That's a total of only 43.4%. Group buys undeveloped East Lake Okoboji shoreline. An Iowa preservation group has raised $8.2 million to buy 50 acres on the East Lake Okoboji shoreline and preserve its natural state. The Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation announced Tuesday that it met the fundraising goal on Monday. The property includes 2,020 feet of natural shoreline, the last remaining undeveloped, privately owned stretch of shoreline on the lake. It also offers one of the last remaining wildlife corridors between the lake and the Spring Run Wetland Complex to the east. By protecting this place, we're able to preserve vital wildlife habitat, water quality benefits, and scenic beauty in a place that is used and loved by so many people. We are honored to partner with the Iowa Great Lakes community to ensure this special place will be preserved forever, and we look forward to people enjoying it for years to come, Natural Heritage Fund President Joe McGovern said. The foundation bought an option last fall on the site and had until Labor Day to raise the money to exercise the option. The INHF is expected to close on the property and take possession by the end of the year. The nonprofit group plans to own the property long-term and work on ecological restoration of the shoreline, native prairie, and oak savanna. It plans to allow low-impact public use, such as multi-use trails extending from the adjacent state park. Sioux City man sentenced to prison for shooting. A Sioux City man was sentenced Friday to 15 years in prison for shooting another man in the leg during a robbery. Dennis Lawson, age 24, had pled guilty in Woodbury County District Court of second-degree robbery, willful injury, and felon in possession of a firearm, all with a habitual offender enhancement. District Judge Jeffrey Neary sentenced Lawson to 15 years on each charge and ordered them to be served concurrently, or at the same time. The 15-year sentence will be served back-to-back with a 5-year prison sentence that was enforced after Lawson's probation in a separate case was revoked. He must serve at least 10.5 years before he is eligible for parole. Neary ordered Lawson's 20-year state prison sentence to be served back-to-back with a 51-month federal prison sentence Lawson received in July. On May 21, 2020, Lawson was in a car with another man. They stopped and obtained $400 from an ATM at a Gordon Drive convenience store. When the man returned to the car, Lawson pulled a gun on him and demanded the money. After the victim refused, Lawson fired 2 shots, one of them hitting the victim in the leg and requiring several surgeries to repair. Neary ordered Lawson to pay restitution to the victim in an amount to be determined and $6,000 to the Iowa Crime Victims Assistance Program. News briefs. Sioux City man arrested after Dickson County pursuit. A Sioux City man was arrested on numerous charges at the conclusion of a high-speed chase Tuesday in Dickson County. The chase began at 8:45 a.m. when a Nebraska State Patrol trooper observed a Subaru Outback speeding on U.S. Highway 20. When the trooper attempted a traffic stop, the Outback's driver sped away, and a chase ensued, reaching speeds of more than 75 miles per hour on county roads. Failing to notice signs warning of a bridge out, the driver entered a construction zone and came to a stop about 10 feet from the drop-off where the bridge was missing. Dawson Emick, age 21, was arrested without incident, and the trooper discovered a female and 2 15-month-old children passengers. Emick was booked into Dickson County Jail on charges of flight to avoid arrest, willful reckless driving, driving while revoked, speeding, traveling on a closed road, and 2 counts of child abuse neglect, causing no injury. Part of 3rd Street to close next week. A portion of 3rd Street will be closed next week while a railroad crossing is improved. The city's engineering division said that 3rd Street, just west of Lewis Boulevard, will be closed on Tuesday to allow BNSF Railroad to complete crossing improvements. Work is expected to conclude on Wednesday. During the closure, traffic will be detoured onto Chambers Street, 6th Street, and Lewis Boulevard. Hard Rock announces 3 acts at the Anthem. Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, Sioux City, is announcing 3 upcoming performances at the Anthem on 3rd Street. The legendary rock band Head East will be performing November 5th. Herman's Hermits, starring original band member Peter Noon, will be in concert November 20th. Country artist Ned Ledoux will be appearing December 3rd. Tickets will go on sale Friday and may be purchased at Hard Rock Casino Sioux City, or in person at the Rock Shop. All Anthem events are for audiences age 21 and older. Engine trouble caused airplane crash near Kingsley. Engine troubles led to Monday's crash of a single-engine plane near Kingsley, federal investigators have found. After experiencing engine issues, the plane landed in a cornfield near Kingsley at about 3:12 p.m., and flipped over, according to an initial crash report filed with the Federal Aviation Administration. The pilot and his passenger were uninjured after the plane, a 1981 Cessna A185F, went down approximately 5 miles east of Kingsley, near the intersection of Plymouth County Road, C-66, and Tamarack Avenue. The report did not name the pilot. Records show the plane is owned by Peter Gokin of Dakota Dunes. Here's an opinion piece. Today, Ravensburg should resign as South Dakota Attorney General. Based on what we know now, and perhaps on what we'll never know, South Dakota Attorney General Jason Ravensburg should resign. We now know Ravensburg's fate in the judicial process after his involvement in a traffic accident a year ago next month that killed a pedestrian in Hyde County. The attorney general took a plea deal 2 weeks ago, just before his trial was to begin. We have known about numerous details, ranging from the vague to the grisly, that have been tied to this case and have haunted our imaginations for months. We know he faced charges only in regard to how he operated his vehicle, not in causing the death of Joseph Beaver, who reportedly had been walking along the side of the road on the dark night of September 12th, when he was struck by Ravensburg's vehicle. We know Ravensburg entered not guilty pleas to the misdemeanor charges, and at one point his lawyers attempted to make Beaver's mental health the crux of the defense, an attempt that was dismissed by the judge. We know that shortly after that effort was scuttled, Ravensburg agreed to a plea deal that will keep him out of jail. He will pay only $500 and $3,742 in court costs, so we'll never know how a jury would have weighed the evidence. We know today that Ravensburg has pointed to partisan opportunists who have manufactured rumors, conspiracy theories, and made statements in direct contradiction to the evidence all sides agreed upon. Thus, we know, as Governor Kristi Noem pointed out last week, and also calling for the AG's resignation, that Ravensburg has not accepted responsibility for this situation, despite the fact that he is both the top attorney and top law enforcement officer in South Dakota. The attorney general has lost the respect of much of the public, and quite possibly many of the law enforcement personnel under him. Based on what we know of him, when Ravensburg was a Yankton attorney, there can be little doubt that this incident has had a deep impact on him. How could it not? But his actions since the incident have seemingly focused much more on legal maneuvering and political calculus rather than a sense of public responsibility, humility, and contrition. His actions have not been those of an attorney general elected by the people, but as a defendant looking for any angle to save himself. His actions also suggest his political ambitions are still intact. He has shown little remorse, at least outwardly, as he strives to put all of this behind him and perhaps to take control of the public narrative. But it's not so easy. Among many other things, Ravensburg will still have to reckon with a civil lawsuit, and he may still face impeachment by the legislature. And people will remember. Here's the Sioux City 6, the best things to do in Siouxland this weekend. Number 1. Pie Guys. Glam metal band Warrant is famous for songs like Heaven and I Saw Red. But come on, their Cherry Pie is an all-time classic. Headbang to your heart's content when Warrant performs at 8 p.m. Saturday at Hard Rock Hotel and Casino's Anthem. Number 2. When Pucks Meet Sticks. The Sioux City Musketeers will be hosting 7 other Western Division teams during a preseason United States Hockey League preseason shootout. Get a sneak peek at the league's best athletes at 1 p.m. Friday and Saturday, as well as at noon on Sunday at the Tyson Event Center, 401 Gordon Drive. Number 3. Great in Gretna. Up-and-coming singer Cooper James is making a name for himself on the country circuit. Originally from Gretna, Nebraska, population 5,037, James will be playing a 9 p.m. Saturday show at Beer Can Alley. Number 4. Nerdy Notions. The nonprofit Tri-State Gamers, headed by recent Weekender cover subject Bart Miller, will host a gamer get-together from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday at the South Sioux City Library. Remember, being a geek is a good thing nowadays. Number 5. All in the Family. In case you were wondering, Sunday is Grandparents' Day. It might be a nice gesture to take Nana and Pop-Pop to see Jack and Mike Langley, who will be hosting Songs for Grandparents' Day concert at 2 p.m. Sunday at the Betty Strong Encounter Center on Larson Park Road. And number 6, drink wine, paint a picture. Are you artsy or do you like a glass of vino? Then check out this collaboration between Pickled Palette and the Oscar Carl Vineyards at 1473 Buchanan Avenue. It starts at 6 p.m. next Wednesday. Bones, beer, and everything in between, with quirky auction items and quality craft beer, Nature Calls raises funds for conservation education. What? Nature Calls fundraiser for the Dorothy Picot Nature Center. When? 6 p.m. September 18th. Live auction begins at 9 p.m. Where? Sioux City Convention Center, 801 4th Street. Things of interest. Life and silent auction, art and craft show, food, as well as 60 different craft beers, in addition to select wines. Tickets. This year, only advance tickets will be sold. To purchase, go to the Dorothy Picot Nature Center on Sioux River Road, or buy them online at woodburyparks.org, or you may call 712-258-0838. How much would you pay for a rib bone or an Edmontosaurus dinosaur bone or a festive wreath made out of deer antlers? Both of these items will be up for bid at the Dorothy Picot Nature Center's Nature Calls fundraiser, taking place September 18th at the Sioux City Convention Center. We try to include auction items a person couldn't get anywhere else, Don Snyder, the Nature Center's education program director, explained. Artworks made of bone certainly qualify as offbeat gift ideas. The auction will also have prints by the late wildlife artist Terry Redlam, a handcrafted cutting board made of black cherry and purple heartwood, or individual paintings that were created by Riley Rex and Clarabelle, the Nature Center's resident three-toed box turtles, and Oz and Mona, the Nature Center's ornate box turtles. All right. You certainly can bid on less exciting stuff like hotel stays, fine jewelry, and more than 70 other live or silent auction items. Plus, you can see the handiwork of area artisans and nature-themed vendors who will be showcasing their best stuff. But we know many annual Nature Calls attendees enjoy the quirkier items, and the beer, of course. Our guests will be able to sample more than 60 craft beers, including some from local brewers, Snyder said. In addition, there will be IPAs, ciders, lagers, select wines, non-alcoholic beverages, and food items available throughout the evening. In fact, the Blue Jeans Casual Dress Code of Nature Calls sets it apart from other nonprofit fundraisers. There's nothing stuffy about Nature Calls, Snyder said. It's just an evening and fun. We're happy to be back after a brief pause due to COVID last year, Snyder said. It is the Nature Center's only fundraising event, and it is vital to funding our programs. Indeed, Nature Calls has helped provide funding for such special programming as the Nature Center's indoor exhibits, the Raptor House, and the popular Discovery Forest Nature Playscape. This year, only advanced tickets will be available. They may be purchased at the Dorothy Picot Nature Center, or online, or by calling 712-258-0838. We have reached the halfway point now, everybody. You're listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, September 9th, 2021 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From North Sioux City, Mark Spanky Charbonneau. Spanky Charbonneau, age 55, of North Sioux City, passed away on Saturday, September 4th. Service will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Visitation with a prayer service will occur on Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. In remembering Mark Allen Charbonneau, a few thoughts come to mind. His unwavering loyalty to his wife, Brenda, his entire family, his remarkable friends, the Minnesota Vikings, a colorful dialect, his gravelly laugh, his large demeanor that accompanied a tender heart, and his deep appreciation for a light-hearted prank. That's the stuff you would learn after 5 minutes of knowing him. The juicy center was his ability to share a sincere connection with those he loved. A relationship with Mark never felt passive. He was engaged and used a unique brand of communication, not just crude humor, although he will be remembered for that too, but a full palette of emotions and a willingness to bring all of himself to every relationship, every exchange, and every moment. For that reason, if you want to remember Mark, you're better off finding the people that you love, clutching them with the force of a grizzly bear, and reminding them what they mean to you with unapologetic emotion. Black ink and recycled paper are perhaps best suited to deliver a thought. Mark's defining characteristic was his ability to make you feel. Remembering Mark requires rare ingredients more befitting of the man himself. A connection with someone you love, a willingness to show that love, and maybe a Bud Light. Mark was born in Sioux City, the proud son of Ed and Rose Peck Charbonneau, on June 15, 1966. He grew up in Riverside, where he would make lifelong friends that he genuinely cherished. He went to heaven on September 4th, unsurprisingly surrounded by his devoted family and special friends. From Sioux City, Misty Lynn Pritchard, age 52, died Sunday, September 5th. Graveside services September 10th at 3 p.m. Little Sioux Township Cemetery in Smithland, Iowa. Visitation will be September 10th from 1 to 2 p.m. Rush Family Chapel, Onawa, Iowa. From Sioux Falls, South Dakota, formerly from Sioux City, Shirley Cummings, age 79, died Wednesday, September 1st. Graveside services September 10th at 1 p.m. Memorial Cemetery, Sioux City. Celebration of life will be following graveside services at the New Hope Church in Mauville, Iowa. From South Sioux City, Rick J. Bellon, age 60, died Wednesday, September 1st. There will be no services at this time. Arrangements are with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Blow. From Lawrence, Iowa, David M. Hubbard, age 55. He died Thursday, September 2nd. Visitation will be September 12th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. From Akron, Iowa, Barbara Ann Derby. Barbara Ann Derby went home to dance with Jesus and her husband on Tuesday, September 7th. Celebration of life will be held at 6 p.m. today, with a light meal after at the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Visitation will be held from 4 p.m. until service time, with the family present. Burial will be at 11 a.m. on Friday in Memorial Park Cemetery. Barbara was born December 14, 1948, to Velma and Alvin Klemke. She wanted to be remembered as trying to be the best mom that she could be, and as someone who loved teaching students. She taught and retired from South Sioux City Senior High School, Akron Wilk Westfield, and Elk Point Jefferson. She would have taught forever, but the Family and Consumer Science home economic programs were discontinued. She had an adventurous spirit. She recently jumped out of a plane and skydived. She had a fun sense of humor and a wonderful smile. She loved to go to Dairy Queen for cherry dilly bars, and her stash of licorice, Twizzlers, and Twinkies never ran out of stock. Two of her favorite titles were Mrs. Derby and Nana. She loved her grandchildren very much and was very proud of them. She also enjoyed roller skating and going for rides. Mom loved her church and church family, Friendship Assembly in Hawarden, Iowa, and she said she was happy to enter God's heavenly palace that was saved for her. She was not afraid of death. She said she looked forward to seeing other family members and friends who had passed before her. From Sergeant Bluff, Bruce E. Maggiro, age 73, passed away in his home on Saturday, September 4th. A family burial service will take place at the Kingsley Cemetery today. A celebration of life service will take place at 11:30 a.m. at the Maurer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamars, Iowa. Today, the Johnson Ernest Funeral Home in Kingsley, Iowa, is in charge of arrangements. Bruce Edward Badgerow was born in 1947 in Sioux City, the eldest son of Robert G. and Carol Higginbottom Badgerow. He was the great-great-grandson of Martinius Badgerow, Jr., the great-grandson of Robert W. Badgerow, and the grandson of Bert E. Badgerow. Bruce graduated from Remsen Union High School in 1967. He continued his education in Nebraska, where he studied drafting. He was married to Patricia Hall, and they had three children. Bruce was living in Mobile when he retired from the maintenance department at Sioux City Brick and Tile. From Akron, Iowa, Levade Gale, age 103, died Saturday, September 4th. Services, September 14th at 10 a.m., All Saints Catholic Parish, St. Joseph Church in Lamars, Iowa. Burial, after the service, Calvary Cemetery in Lamars. Visitation, September 14th from 9 a.m. until service time at the church. Arrangements are with Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. And that concludes today's obituaries. A Hitch in Time. Lamars Community Theater takes on Master of Suspense in unique stage play. By day, Candace Nash is best known for being one half of KUSUX's Tony and Candace Morning Show with Tony Michaels. But for four performances, she will moonlight as an actress, making her Lamars Community Theater debut. What juicy role will Nash be playing? I play the part of a radio show announcer, she explained during a recent dress rehearsal. I sit by a microphone, reading my lines off a script. Just between you and me, I'm not much of an actress, Nash confided. Since I have no memorization skills, I can't be trusted learning dialogue. Jennifer Shulton insisted Nash was being too hard on herself. A veteran with the Lamars Community Theater, Shulton was directing Nash and 11 other actors in a production of Vintage Hitchcock, which is a reimagined radio show that offered abridged versions of such Alfred Hitchcock movies as The Lodgers, Sabotage, and The 39 Steps. Adapted by playwright Joe Landry, Vintage Hitchcock will be performed at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday at the Plymouth County Historical Museum in Lamars. It was very common for movies to be adapted for the radio, Shulton said. In addition to playing our announcer, Candace has been giving us suggestions on where to place microphones and on how actors should speak into their mics. Make no mistake about it, even though it was written for the stage, Vintage Hitchcock is also 1940s era radio theater, complete with sound effects man Eddie McGee and a singing commercial or two. This show literally takes you back to the golden age of radio, Shulton said, as actors dressed in vintage suits, hats, and gloves make their way onto the stage. Vintage Hitchcock's unique format of three self-contained playlets presented back-to-back-to-back was challenging for Alison Hansen, an actress who appeared as a British mom, a brusque Irish cop, and a small Cockney boy in different scenes in the same show. Since it's supposed to be a radio show, an actress can play a male and a female and get away with it, Hansen said. I just have to remember which accent goes with which character. On the other hand, Trinity Brunsting was just playing female roles. However, one was British and the other one was Canadian. I'm cheating a bit, she admitted. My Canadian accent sounds a lot like an American accent. What Brunsting may have lacked in dialect versatility, she made up for in a very different way. Trinity's a screamer, Shulton said. It isn't easy to scream on cue. Since Vintage Hitchcock has some scary moments, an ear-pissing, piercing scream comes in handy. At Lamars Community High School, Brunsting is an 11th grader who wants to become a professional actress. I'd love to have a career like Scarlett Johansson, she said. For Carl Johnson, a retired farmer and commodities broker, acting is simply a lark. I literally have no acting in my background, he said. One day, I decided to audition for a part, got it, and have been acting in Lamar's community theater plays ever since. It's very addictive. Like Johnson, Bob Hill plays multiple roles in Vintage Hitchcock. Also like Johnson, he is a later-in-life newcomer when it comes to acting. I made my acting debut at age 56, and I'm now 59, Hill explained, and I feel completely comfortable on stage. What is Hill's day job? I'm a maintenance man for a retirement home, he said. In addition, Hill served in two distinct capacities for the Lamar's Community Theater. He's not only its official actor, but he is also its unofficial bat wrangler. Apparently, bats love this place, he said, inside the Plymouth County Historical Museum's cavernous auditorium. When I blow my electronic bat whistles, they seem to go away. According to Shulton, bats were never an issue at the Postal Playhouse, which is the longtime home of the Lamar's Community Theater. The problem with the Postal Playhouse is that we couldn't socially distance from one another, she said. Actors were often only a few feet away from the audience. This was good for intimate drama, but a big no-no for COVID-19 concerns. We hope to be back at the Postal Playhouse by the end of the year, Shulton said. We're just grateful that the museum is allowing us to use their space. A spooky former high school might be the right venue for something from the legendary master of suspense. I love movies in general, but I've always enjoyed a good movie thriller, Shulton said. Theater newcomer Nash isn't into scary movies at all. I've started watching Hitchcock's classic 1960 movie Psycho a few times, Nash said, and I've never once been able to finish it. So here are the details. Vintage Hitchcock, abridged adaptations of three Hitchcock movies presented as if they were 1940s era radio plays, will be presented by the Lamar's Community Theater at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and at 2 p.m. on Sunday at the Plymouth County Historical Museum in Lamar's, Iowa. Let's now turn to sports. Kaia Downs races against time during senior cross-country season. Kaia Downs raced across the clock on Tuesday, and that's been her mantra since the season began. The East High School senior cross-country runner, ranked second in the IATC Class 4A individual rankings, placed first at the Lamar's-hosted Gary Meyer Invitational, with a time of 18 minutes, 55 seconds. The 5,000-meter course was held at Prairie Rose Golf Club. Downs won by over a minute as MOC Floyd Valley's Emily Haverdink was the runner-up in 20 minutes flat. Downs was pleased by her performance as her primary goal on Tuesday was to run a sub-19-minute race. At this point, winning isn't satisfactory anymore, Downs said. If I can win and run a good time, or get sixth, like she did at the Augustana Twilight on Friday, that's more important to me. Good times is what's going to win at the end of the season. Downs said that's the best meet she has run at Prairie Rose since the 2019 MRAC meet, when Downs beat Bishop Heelan grad Amber Asoff for the conference title. On the second loop, Downs knew that she was at the 12-minute mark, so she knew she could run the last 2,000 meters in 7 minutes. She pushed, and when she saw the clock at the end of the finish line, she let out a big smile. That's how her victories are going to be impactful between now and the state meet in about 6 weeks. She started the season with a victory at the Bishop Heelan meet at Riverside Park last month, but that wasn't good enough for her. She felt like she didn't run a good enough time based on her expectations, and that got to her. Time is definitely important to me, Downs said. Time is all I have right now. That's not a brag or anything. If I let myself get comfortable, then at the end of the season I'm not going to be where I need to be. It's so hard to compete against something that you can't see. When you have someone you can compete against, you can hear the crowd and hear the crowd fighting for that person, it makes you want to keep going. That's why cross-country is so hard, Downs added. There's nothing actively that's pushing you. It's just yourself. At the end of the year, that's going to be an advantage for me. When I race the clock, I get mentally stronger. Downs has also gained speed so that she can race against the clock better. She realized that at the state track meet. Downs finished in the top three at the 800-meter and 1500-meter races at the state track meet in May, against some of the same competition you'll see later at the Heartland Classic in Pella, and then, of course, at the state meet in Fort Dodge. She realized that she's here for state titles, East co-coach Rick Clarahan said. We're not just here to show up and place. We are here to be the champion. I think that's the biggest takeaway she got from the spring season. She's easily focused and stays focused on what the real important things are. Todd Roering knows how good the Crusaders can be this year. The rankings, fourth in the 3A preseason standings and fourth last year at the state meet, back that up. A team title Tuesday with 49 points further proves that. Roering doesn't try to bring the expectations up with the girls. That's enough on their plate. Maddie Demke and Brooklyn Stanley were Bishop Heelan's top two finishers, both finishing fifth and sixth, respectively. With the Crusaders being so young, Roering has taken the first few days one at a time. A lot can happen in a year, Roering said. We're looking good for where we need to be. They're about where I need them to be. Crusaders freshman Delaney Salisbury was 11th in 21-11. Roering expected that the young Crusaders were going to step up right away. It's hard to know what's going to happen, Roering said. You just never know with a young team. To say I have the same expectations, I probably do. Our team is to get to state. Our goal is to get to state as a team. Metro Prep Roundup. Class 3A top-ranked Sergeant Bluff Luton volleyball sweeps north. The Sergeant Bluff Luton High School volleyball team continued its hot streak to the season with a three-set sweep over North on Tuesday. The Warriors, ranked number one in Class 3A, swept the Stars by set scores of 25-15, 25-15, and 25-17. SBL had two hitters who had two double-digit kills. Alexa Trover led SBL with 15 kills, while Emma Salker had 13. Maddie Hinkle led the Warriors with 46 assists. The Warriors had 50 as a team. Salker also had two service aces. Olivia Wolf had team-high 13 digs. I feel like we came out and played a complete game, SBL Renee Winkle said. We've played strong, even through some long rallies. Here are some other scores. Bishop Heelan 3, West 0. East 3, South Sioux 0. Dakota Valley 3, Beresford 0. In cross country, Downs wins the Meyer invite. East senior Kaya Downs won the meet in Brunsville with a time of 18 minutes and 55 seconds. North runs a nearly perfect meet. The Stars nearly had all five runners finish in the top five on Tuesday in Brunsville, but they settled for a top six result. Nathaniel Kiffel led the pack with a win in 15:51. The Stars packed together during the first mile, and Kiffel pulled away during the second half of the race. The Siouxland Athlete of the Week is Lawton's Matt Peters, who exploded against Missouri Valley, by Shane Lance. Whenever Lawton Bronson High School running back Matt Peters touched the ball last Friday, exciting things happened. The Eagles senior came up big in the team's 66-32 win over Missouri Valley, taking the ball six times for 176 yards and two touchdowns on offense, while scoring 3 2-point conversions and finishing with 11 tackles on defense. He also made a difference on special teams as Peters returned a Missouri Valley punt 65 yards for a touchdown in Lawson Bronson's home opener. For his spectacular performance, Peters has been selected as the Journal's Siouxland Athlete of the Week. It's one of those opportunities when you have a player like that, that he really didn't do anything wrong, Lawton Bronson coach Jason Garnon said. He was on every play defensively. Anytime he touched the ball, it felt like he was gashing for big yards. While the numbers might make him seem like an old pro, Peters is new to the running back position. In fact, Peters took only one handoff last season and finished with -2 yards rushing. Instead, he made his impact in the passing game, finishing second on the team with 28 receptions for 399 yards. He was more of a universal player last year, Garnon said. He wasn't triggered on quite as much, and I think they had him at more of a split end, to be honest. But then, after this past year, he worked really hard in the weight room, and he's a senior now. He took it upon himself to carry this team, and so far, he has been doing that. This season, Peters has 20 carries through 2 games for 236 yards and has a team-high 19.5 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 2 fumble recoveries, and 4 2-point conversions, with Peters and fellow senior Isaiah Ashley leading the way on offense. The Eagles are off to their best start in years. The Eagles are 2-0 for the first time since 2012. For all of the noise he makes on the field, Peters' coach said that he is actually one of the quietest players he has ever met. He does everything by example, Garnon said. He doesn't do a lot of talking, and he isn't the big rah type of player. He just leads by example, and all the other kids follow. Garnon is in his first year in charge of the Eagles after spending 7 seasons coaching at the semi-pro level with the Sioux City Stampede. So far, he has been thrilled by the production of Peters along with the rest of the Eagles' senior class. Garnon previously coached as an assistant at Lawton Bronson from 2006 to 14 under former head coach Chad Mosman. It just seemed like any play call that was made, it was working, Garnon said of Friday's Wind. This senior class that I inherited is fantastic. Every one of them has been leaders so far this year. They've all contributed. The Eagles finished with a 5-3 record last season and fell out of playoffs with a 2-point loss to Riverside in the second round of the state's postseason. But with a new head coach and new double-wing offense that has worked to near perfection in the first 2 weeks, Peters is expecting more from the team and more from himself. Our goal is just to make it to the UNI Dome, Peters said. With the coaching staff we have and with the players, I think we can do it this year. Sioux City North boys cross-country team wins with 16-point night. Will Lohr and the rest of the North High School cross-country team aren't necessarily seeking a perfect meet, but the opportunity once again presented itself on Tuesday. The Stars, ranked number 1 in Class 4A by the Iowa Association of Track Coaches, nearly had all 5 of their scorers finish in consecutive order and recorded a perfect meet score of 15. Instead, the Stars settled for a 16-point night and a relaxed win at the Gary Meyer Invitational at Prairie Rose Golf Course in Brunsville. Natanael Kiffel won the race on the 5,000-meter course in 15 minutes, 51 seconds. We were ready, Natanael Kiffel said. We were consistent in the first mile, and after that we just pulled away. I'm not a fast sprinter. I'm not that good. But I would like to practice to be first in races more. Natanael has grown since last season. Last year he wasn't even a top 3 runner on the state championship team, but he blossomed toward the end of cross-country season to be that X factor that the Stars welcomed. It's been fun to see his growth, Stars coach Abdier Marrero said. It's really fun watching him blossom right now. Lohr was the runner-up in 16:03, and senior Yamein Kiffel was the bronze medalist in 16:11. Cam Nash was fourth in 16:17. The runner who broke up the perfect meet was MOC Floyd Valley senior Sam May, who placed fifth in 16:36. It's the second straight year that the Stars have had the chance to run a perfect meet. Last season, the Stars nearly pulled off the feat, but Sheldon's standout Brendan Kane had different thoughts. "We just joke about it at this point," Lohr said. "It's not bugging us down." Every night, Marrero throws a challenge at the Stars, and the task Marrero threw at North on Tuesday was to sprint out of the gate and pack tightly right away. At the one-mile mark, there were 5-star runners running in a cluster, all together, without anyone really leading the pack. The idea was to have everyone connect with one another and just get a feel of how each other is running while building a wall between the North runners and everyone else. "That gives us practices for races when we go out guns blazing. That gives us a push. That's super important," Lohr said. "And that's something we did very well. 1 through 5, and even Jose Gutierrez running as the 6th, they all ran to the plan very well. That'll be super beneficial going into the big races." Sure, Nat Nael was out in front, but by mere milliseconds. That rang true at the 2-mile mark, but Nat Nael pulled away near that checkpoint. Lohr let him know, knowing that winning the race as an individual doesn't matter that much anymore. He wants another team championship. There will be nights when the Stars won't be tested. Marrero wants to avoid any letdown, physically or mentally, by giving them challenges throughout the season to keep them engaged. "The idea is that we're going to learn to hurt while still being able to push," Marrero said. "We need them to make that connection during the race. That is the difference between hurting and feeling okay. This was on purpose." The big positive is that they're so big picture thinkers, Marrero said. "They understand what I'm asking them to do. They get it. We know that winning isn't the thing. It's about running a certain way to use the tactics against a Dowling Catholic or Dubuque Hempstead and Johnston so that we're ready for those things." And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, September 9th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of your day.